So as we know, a lot can happen in tennis in just a matter of days. And congratulations, Serena Williams, who revealed the expansion of her family at, I believe, the Met Gala.
Yes, she is expecting her second. I think they said that it was a long time coming for big sister Olympia. Sounded like she'd been wanting a sibling. It's something that Serena talked about when she sort of stepped away again, in that was a goal of hers. So huge congratulations. It's always nice when that works out, because it's not always the easiest of journey for people. So delighted.
And she talked about that a little bit in the article she did about it's not always that straightforward to look to expand your family, and she wanted to. And then there were some pictures of her on a tennis court, and people thought, is she coming back? Is the return back on? Because she kind of said never say never. Look, maybe it will still be after she's had her second. But as you know, recently, I mean, I'm quite lucky. I got mine done together, twins at once. I don't remember the first couple of years, but it was at once. As you know, from having staggered siblings, it's a little bit more work, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got different stages to manage. We were in the depths of potty training this weekend. So yes, it's a little bit different. I mean, I suppose one element is easier because you've got two at the same stage, but there's pros and cons to every situation, really, isn't there, when it comes to that sort of thing. So, you know, I think Olympia's much older than, say, my oldest one is. So yeah, she'll be she could babysit, really. Extra childcare.
Not to go down the potty training route, but, and I know, as you say, some things are easier when you've got two because you're doing it at once. But when it comes to potty training, having two at once was, I think it's a part of my life that I've tried to block out. But having two children potty training, you know, some people say, do it in the summer. Just take everything off and let them go around the house and see what happens. Oh, my word. As I say, I think I've blocked a large part of that out, because you think, oh, yeah, I'm just going to get it done at once. Two at once, off we go. It was, I mean, I don't know how you've been like with one, but, oh, it's not good, is it?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the way to approach it, though, isn't it? Just whip it all off, see how it goes. At least the weather was nice this weekend, so we spent a lot of time outside. So that was good. but, you know, largely successful. But, yeah, you've just got to be just so on it. I mean, that's the trouble.
You've got to accept it.
Yeah.
You've got to accept it's not going to be fun.
No.
It's not going to be pleasant. But the when you come out the other side, it's going to be a lot better.
Yes. Right? Well, I mean, changing nappies isn't fun.
No. So I think you've just... It's actually interesting. I've been spending time recently with our friend Naomi Brody, who had twins in December last year.
Yes.
And she's been staying near me while she's been doing some work recently. And it's been wonderful to go off and see the little ones. But also, you forget all that stuff. You know, when you're in there, I kept getting like flashbacks. You know, flashbacks to two babies maybe crying at the same time, or suddenly needing to be fed, or this. I think it's a period. Someone said... It's like with twins, it's like a fog for the first couple of years. And it's been really lovely, but also I've been like, whoa. And you get that feeling at the end when you can hand them back. You can say, oh, that's lovely. They're lovely. Bye.
So much nicer.
do they want their mum? They want their mum. I think they want their mum. Bye. So that's been lovely, spending time with Naomi. She's back doing some commentary, which is great. And again, it's that joke. And I know we can't compare our juggle to Serena Williams's juggle, because she has a lot of help. She has the infrastructure, everything like that. But that it's real, isn't it? It's that juggle of wanting, I know you've done a little bit of work, you're coming back to it later, but I don't know whether you're, and I know Naomi's going to be looking to play again, so whether you're getting yourself back physically, mentally, it's a bit of a juggle, because life is very different.
Logistics, that's what parenting is. It's just logistics. The rest of it's sort of all right. But yeah, logistics of pickups and who's doing this and work and all sorts and childcare, it's just... that's what I think, really. That's what most of my energy goes into. And with two, it's just extra logistics.
But you're organised. You're really organised.
Oh.
You are.
Not sure my husband would agree with that.
I'm going to send you after this a picture of what I have on my fridge. It's like a calendar with, as you say, pickups and drop-offs and clubs and things that I forget and other things that need to be on there and all this kind of stuff that no one looks at apart from me. It's all there. No one looks at it, but it's I'm kind of building up to going away for some work, and I'm starting to put my plans in place. But, you know, people have done it before, they will do it again. And congratulations to Serena Williams, family gonna get bigger. In terms of what's going on at the moment, and a lot has happened, I didn't really know where to start. Let's start with Emma Raducanu. Okay. I know it's been a while now since there was the press conference that a lot of people talked about. I think, what was it? 68 words in
58.
Oh, I gave her 10 more. 58 in a very short space of time. And it's not what people have been used to, because she has come in and been chatty and talk. Then hours before her first round match in Madrid, she withdrew. So are we putting together that press conference was a result of the fact that she knew she probably wouldn't be taken to the court?
Yeah, and she knew she'd be falling out of the top 100, and she knew that there'd be plenty of questions that come with that. The difficulty is that, you know, it doesn't seem like such a big deal. You know, I think for people, you know, who are outside of the professional tennis world, you think, okay, she does interviews all the time, right? You do press conferences after every match, you do pre-tournament interviews, like she's doing lots and lots of media stuff all the time, and a lot of it obligated. And okay, for once, yeah, she was pretty arsey, obviously didn't want to be there. You can sort of go, yeah, I mean, who doesn't have a day like that where they just like, I just do not want to deal with this today. And so you can sort of understand it. The trouble is that the people, if you stonewall them like that, they are the people writing the articles, and they take it very personally, especially because they travel to the tournaments because of you. And their job is to get interesting information from you and colour, and to be able to write a story, and ideally a positive story. That's what they want. They follow Emma all year round. They want it all to be good and positive, and to be able to build on it and to get people really excited with Wimbledon coming up as well in the country. And the British journalists, yeah, were not happy when, you know, they've made the trip, they've travelled to Stuttgart, they've told their bosses, like, yeah, you know, I've got to go there, I've got to talk to her, because one-on-one I can get more interesting stuff for people, and then you get that. I can understand why it's very frustrating, but
then,
you know,
at
it's
the
just
same
sort
time
of like, it's a one-off. It's not like she's doing it all the time. I have sat in one of those press conferences though, which was Riley Opelka at Davis Cup a couple years ago, and it was it was really uncomfortable. It was really shocking. And he came in and, as I say, just stonewall, just one word answers. I think his was even worse. It was like 14 words in his press conference. And I was sat at the back of it. And then obviously he walks out, and then I can hear the frustration and, you know, the annoyance of all of the journalists who are there. And they're like, we're trying to talk to you. We're trying to get something out of you here. It's difficult because there is this media ecosystem. Well, there's a whole ecosystem when it comes to being a professional tennis player. The media play a huge and pivotal role in that. People within the media and the press, I think predominantly, overestimate their role in it all. And I think the players really underestimate their role in it all. So you do get quite a lot of friction, because I do find sometimes, you know, the press say, well, you know, they're making all these millions because of us, and it's not necessarily the case. And as much as a bit of promotion is good, it's not. And sometimes the players, they can be disrespectful and a bit like, whatever, you just write your articles, and there's going to be, you know, things that are wrong, and, you know, assumptions that are made that have no verification, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, they're just going to think, oh, well, what are they doing? And then, as I say, you get a bit of a clash like that. So I think if the press could bring down their estimations of themselves, and if the players could bump it up a little bit and recognise they're important, then we'd have a really happy ecosystem working in harmony.
But to be fair, they probably got a better story with the 58 words, or a more read and a more widespread.
Well, yes, but it's not the story that they want, because, and this is something that players do fail to understand, I think, a lot, because there is criticism that comes their way from these journalists. But ultimately, they do want to write positive pieces. They want Emma to be the darling. That's what they want. They want fans. They want people to be obsessed with reading about Emma, because it gives them more work. That's their job. She's our current superstar, alongside Andy Murray, of course. But she is the superstar. She may not be the British number one, but that's it. She's our most recent Grand Slam champion.
But then in terms of what sells, it's what came out of that 58 words. I bumped into a couple of people on the street. They said, oh, did you see that press conference? She only said 58 words, and other people were talking about it and lots of people reading about it. So I'm not saying it was the right thing to have happened, but in terms of, yes, they want to write a nice positive piece about her, trying to keep her place, defend some points in Madrid, stay in the top 100. But what they got is something that was probably read by more people, which, no, it doesn't reflect well on either party, I don't really think, because it doesn't really reflect well on Emma Raducanu, who's obviously having a bad day dealing with injury. And then the press came in for a little bit of criticism, which was, I think, unfair to a point, when people were saying, well, why were they asking her these questions? They were always going to ask her these questions. They were always going to go in and ask the questions, and having to face a question about dropping out of the top 100, because that was going to be and has become a reality. There was the question about Jodie Burridge, which, it's wonderful to see Jodie doing so well. I think she's, what, 108 now, and Raducanu is currently around 102, saying, you're going to lose your British number one spot to her. How do you feel about how she's doing? I mean, which of us want to be asked about, hey, Naomi, there's someone who's just about to overtake you, and how do you feel about that? It's difficult, isn't it? But these questions were going to be asked anyway. It just so happened that due to the answers, it became a talking point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think from the press's perspective, it's a bit more short term. You get a bit of a hit. And as I say, people did enjoy, I think, that story and talking about it. I agree. I had loads of people saying, you know, asking me about it and being, what's wrong with her? You know, what's, because that's all they've seen. But, you know, I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it? Because the press, you know, they're asking questions about facts. But as we saw a few years ago with Johanna Konta, sometimes players just do not want to be reminded of the facts. And if you are just about to go into your first round in Madrid, do you want to be told, if it was completely up to you and you didn't have any press obligations, would you want your coach telling you, would you want people around you saying to you, you might fall out of the top 100 if you don't defend these points, knowing that you've got Iga Swiatek in the second round if you even win the first round? Like, that's where it can be really difficult for players. And I know a lot of players don't like to know who they're playing later on in the draw. And they get told before they've even played a match in a tournament, oh, you've got a potential second round meeting with Iga Swiatek. How do you feel about that? And they're like, well, I haven't won my first match yet. And they don't want to know that. They don't want to be reminded of it. They want to be in their own bubble and just take it one point at a time and all of those cliches. And the press, going into those press conferences, it just reminds you of all of the facts of the bigger picture. And especially if you're having a hard time, the big picture is that you're having a hard, rubbish time. And what you want to try and do if you're going into a tournament is to try and focus on the positives, right? It's such a standard psychological thing to do. Focus on the positives. I know you feel terrible, you feel like crap, but let's focus on these elements. And then you've got to go and sit there and hear about all of the negative elements from a bunch of people that, you know, it's not like you hang out with them, is it? You probably don't like them. And yeah, I can totally understand. It's really, really frustrating. And I don't think the press quite understand that, because they just go, we're just stating facts. And it's like, well, do you know what? Sometimes facts are really annoying. They're really bloody annoying.
Sometimes.
And I wish they weren't true.
Sometimes I don't want to hear them. And look, normally it rumbles along nicely. They know they have the obligation to do the press conferences, the press go in there, et cetera, et cetera. And she was having a bad day, quite possibly highly likely linked to the fact that she knew she probably wasn't even going to step on court because of the injury, and therefore she would drop out the top 100. And I think with Emma Raducanu, the difficult thing is, well, we've talked about this with tennis players. You do everything in the spotlight. You come back from injury in the spotlight. You deal with problems in the spotlight. You can't get away from it. She's also got the deals, the sponsorships, and she's having to do things for other people. So people will say, well, I just saw her wearing diamonds, dancing in an advert for whoever. Yes, because that's part of a contract she signed. So that's obligations that she has to do. It doesn't reflect at all on the tennis side of things. Yes, you've got to get a balance between what you're doing, but it's difficult because you're living it in the spotlight. Everything you're doing, especially due to her meteoric rise and what she achieved, we might never see again. Coming through qualifying, not dropping a set, winning a Grand Slam title at her age is truly astonishing. And I think we keep having to remember that even if he doesn't win another Grand Slam again, she has done something that we may not see again in our lifetime. And it's just difficult, isn't it? It's difficult, especially when her body, whether it's physical, mental, a combination of the two, isn't playing ball as she would like it to do. And as you say, there's a group of press that follow her around. That's part of their job. It's part of the reason they are being sent to tournaments, because Emma Raducanu is there and Andy Murray is there. And I know, you know, the bumping up and bumping down you mentioned, I'm not sure we'll ever get the right bump in the right direction.
Yeah.
We'll keep working.
I don't know. I think from Emma's perspective, I imagine as a player, the most frustrating thing is the injury situation. Yeah. It's yet another setback. And the thing is I think we've talked about this before, is that it can be, I wouldn't say straightforward, but it's easier to recover from your first significant injury, or, you know, you can have a certain amount of niggles, but there's sort of this compounding of time not competing.
Yeah.
And we see that, I think, with somebody like Bianca Andreescu, for example. She came back from her first significant injury like nothing had ever happened. She just came back and started winning. But then coming back from her second injury, it was harder. And then it's been, I think we're on the third significant injury now she's coming back from. And she is coming back, but it's taking much, much longer because the blocks of time you're having off are compounding. Now, they're significant injuries, and Emma's had minor injuries, some niggles, I suppose you would call them. But it's just another week that she doesn't get to be out on court competing. And you slip further and further. Obviously, the ranking slips, but that's by the by. She won a slam when she was ranked outside 100. You know, she could do it again. But, you know, it's just your confidence and your level, it's slipping all the time. And everybody else is pushing forward as well. So there's a double... there's a double whammy there. So it just does become harder and harder. Every opportunity that you're not able to compete for, it's just so much harder to come back in the end. And as I say, when you're young, you can come back from your first injury, no problem. You can do your rehab, this. You know, I think she tolerated the injuries quite well to begin with. But, you know, she's so inexperienced, even though she's a Grand Slam champion. And, you know, every week that she doesn't get to compete, it's just another week without the experience. And the problem is if you're not winning tournaments, if you're not going deep, you're not getting many matches. So she is getting one or two matches at each tournament that she's able to compete in. And, you know, that's not very many. So you need to get quite a lot of tournaments in a row to try and build anything in terms of sort of momentum and developing your game and learning, which she needs to do because, you know, she doesn't play like a top 10 player, you know, since the US Open. She hasn't. You know, so that's where it becomes really difficult. So I think she's just in a really tough spot at the moment because there's no way she could just switch it on again. I just don't see it. I mean, maybe I'll be proved wrong and she'll go and win Wimbledon. Who knows? But it's tough.
Would you suggest to her, don't worry about the clay, just come back for the grass? You know, is it worth coming back and putting her body through the rigors of the clay to, or would you just say, because it's coming up to that, it's coming up to silly season for Brits in the UK. Yeah. Would that be something you would suggest? Or because she hasn't had enough matches, would it be, no, as soon as you're fit, whatever surface it is, you've got to get out there and get some matches?
Look, it really depends, I think, on the mindset of Emma right now. I think if she really is feeling pretty negative about it all, then maybe that's a good way to go. I think that is a short-term solution, and she might feel better for this year, which could have a huge value because that could then propel her on to do better. But really, her body needs to go through the rigors of life on tour and playing week in, week out, and playing back-to-back matches and losing and having to train, and because you need to learn what works for you. It's trial and error. You know, I mean, people have such completely different training regimes between them all. It's even at the top of the sport. You've got, you know, Roger Federer, who it seems like he just does like 20 minutes here and there and everything's been fine. I mean, obviously not now, but in his life, as opposed to Rafael Nadal, who's, you know, just going to be doing every hour under the sun he possibly could. You know, that everybody does it really differently. So she's got to figure out what works for her. It seems like it's definitely not high volume. Definitely the body can't deal with that. Any sort of volume she's really struggling with. But yeah, how do you progress when you can't compete? You can't progress.
Tough,
you can only go backwards. And this is a long time that she has not been able to compete consistently for. And it's such a shame because we were starting to see it building, but it can only build with momentum. You cannot just play. That's why there is not a single player, even somebody, Serena maybe in her prime, but there is not a player on tour who has decided that, okay, they're just going to play once every couple of months, because why not? Like, I'll just play once every couple of months and I'll just play hard, and see how it? I do, whatever.
You need volume. You know,
Kyrgios maybe tried to do that, but he obviously didn't play at his best level. He could for a match, and he took out some big names, but you know, he wasn't playing a full schedule. And then lo and behold, he plays a full schedule last year, and he makes the final of a slam, and he plays phenomenally well. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. Even the skill level of Kyrgios, and you could put Emma in a similar category of winning a slam in the way that she did, but even he could not really do anything serious in the world of tennis when he wasn't playing like that. Now, it might be a choice, it might be because of injury, it doesn't really matter. You're not on court, and that's that.
It's interestingly, linking it to snooker randomly, Luca Brecel from Belgium just won the World Snooker Championships at the Crucible in the UK. And what everyone was talking about was he was partying in between matches, before, he had his pint of beer with him in there. And in the interview at the end, they said, "And your way of doing it was partying." He went, "Yeah, partied." He'd never before this year got, I think, past the first round. He's 28 years of age. And I think he just, different things work for different people. But for him, he was just, "Yeah, I just party, went out with my friends." And now he's had this life-changing win. Sorry to randomly jump to snooker.
No, but that'll work for a time, but that doesn't lead to consistent
long-term
results.
Yeah,
you know, and you can have a one-off. Like I said, with Kyrgios, you know, you'd have these one-off phenomenal matches. But to do anything consistently, and even to get to the position where he was playing against those players, you know, the way that he went about it was just never going to happen.
I tell you, it was really nice to see the level that Dominic Thiem showed against Stefanos Tsitsipas. Now, Tsitsipas came through in three in Madrid. There were some nice words between the two at the net, because that has been... He never really had that much time to enjoy his US Open win, Dominic Thiem. And he talked about it. It was a little bit the sort of mental aspect of, wow, look what I've done now. Everyone thought it would be Roland Garros, the first major. It came with the US Open, and then the physical and the body broke down. And it's felt like he's had to start again, mentally and physically build himself up. And it was, there's still a way to go. But wasn't it nice to see that team and that level he was playing against Tsitsipas?
Yeah, so Dominic Thiem's a fascinating one, and it's a bit different because he's done the grind, he's done the work, and he's got himself to the position, and he got himself to the level where I don't think having layoffs would impact him as much in terms of the level that he could produce coming back to the court. Now, he's slightly different because he's had to change his technique. So that's obviously a massive problem for him on his biggest weapon. So and it's a significant change as well. So that's where he does have to rebuild. And then I think also maybe it's sort of, you know, bit him in the bum a bit, the fact that he had played so much so consistently, because I think mentally having a long break and having to rehab was probably going to be more difficult for somebody like Thiem than it would be for some other players. But it's been pretty brutal for him, hasn't it? And I think that he can get back to the level. You know, he has banked that. Those weeks and hours and all of those titles and finals and matches and everything, it's all still there, but it's just going to take a lot longer to find it again. Because it wasn't like he was a sensation. He was just a top quality world class player who did manage to win a Grand Slam. But yeah, it's just it is rough, but it's slowly building. It's just really slow. You know, I think about last year and how much he progressed through the year. It is just getting better and better and better. But yeah, it's just slow. It's tough.
Now, this probably doesn't keep you awake at night. That's more likely to be a little one waking up, alerting you to the fact that they need something. But how worried are you or not about the Coco Gauff forehand?
Well, I mean, I think worried is probably the wrong way to describe it, because, you know, she's currently ranked number 6 in the world, I think.
She's been to a Grand Slam final. It's not, but it mental or physical. It's the area that everyone is honing in on, and it's the area where people are getting results on. Is it a bit Sabalenka-y? Is it kind of blockage? Is it technical? Is it mental? It's not a bad forehand, but it is an obvious weakness in her armoury that is starting to be exposed a little more. And I would assume, and you could tell me more about this, the more it's exposed, the maybe more it does become mental.
I think we've talked about this before, but I don't think the mental side is actually as important in this. It obviously is massive, but she has technical issues in her forehand. And if she didn't, she wouldn't have anything mentally to worry about. You just don't. That's the point of working on your technique, is so that it's there when you're nervous, when you're panicking, when you're emotional, when you're not thinking, when you haven't slept. It's just there for you. And it's not for her. And on her good days, her forehand is fantastic. And on her bad days, it makes her lose. Ultimately, that's how it is. So it's very hard for her to maintain the consistency in the top 10 when she has that sort of fundamental problem. And you referenced Sabalenka. Yeah, Sabalenka had technical issues in her serve, and then she went away and she rebuilt it. And when you have success young, you don't tend to rebuild these sorts of things. It becomes much more difficult, even though she is still so young. She's got plenty of time to rebuild it. But it's harder because, you know, that your time to have rebuilt things was sort of through your teenage years. That's the time when you can address it all. And because you're winning, you just don't want to, and you don't really get into the right mindset. I mean, I look at somebody like...
Because you have to take a step back, don't you? If you're going to rebuild, you've got to accept that it might get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, and I think that it would be beneficial for her to do that. I do think that would be the right thing, but I'm not... Like, that is incredibly difficult. I mean, tennis players do not want to take time off. Tennis players barely want to have a holiday.
Unless it's to the Maldives. Yeah. Unless it's the Maldives.
But, you know, somebody like Coco Gauff is so driven, and it's very difficult when you've been that successful at such a young age with that forehand. It's like the Ostapenko serve. I remember listening to Martina Navratilova talk at the end of 2017 when Ostapenko had won the French at the end of that year at the tour finals. Navratilova was saying she needs to rebuild the serve. And if you're Ostapenko, you're going, I just want to slam. Like, I don't need a better serve. I just need to keep doing what I'm doing. But, you know, Navratilova is right, but you can understand the situation with Ostapenko. You look at Alexander Zverev as well with his double faults on his serve. He has a technical issue there, but he was so good so young that he never really rebuilt it. So I think that you're less likely, just anecdotally, just viewing a player, these aren't facts, it's just what I've sort of view, is that you're less likely to really rebuild your technique if you've been very, very good, very young. I think mentally it's a difficult switch to make. Whereas if you've been Sabalenka, I think it's different. She was obviously very good, very young, but she wasn't a sensation as a teenager. Mm. I think that you're more likely to go, right, I need to sort this out, and then do the work to do it.
It's hard though, isn't it? It is, because again, we talk about being in the spotlight, and but you don't believe the mental side is linked to it. You don't think that it will become more of a mental issue if it gets exposed more and more. You don't. Do you think the two are linked, or on this case, not so much?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, it's you're going to feel mentally very vulnerable when you know you have a weakness. So it's always going to play on your mind. I don't think it's going to. You know, I don't think it would turn into like having the yips on her forehand. Remember, she had the yips on her serve not too long ago, only a couple of years ago, really. It's a bit more difficult to get that on the forehand, although I have seen it, and it is pretty horrifying to watch when people physically cannot swing their forehand and the ball was like landing in front of them or it hitting the back fence. They absolutely can't swing that. That's not going to happen. But... Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a mental aspect, but the mental aspect is there because of the technical weakness. There's no point in treating the symptoms. You've got to treat the cause. And I think that people just often just go, oh, it's in your head. And I think that that's really out of order on the player because, yeah, it's down to the player, but it's also down to the coach as well. You know, you've got to sort it out. It's not going to get in your head. You know, like if you've got a great shot, you're just going to be delighted every time you get a chance to hit it, right? And I think that, yeah, that's what makes the difference. It's about how you feel about your shot. And you can't lie to yourself. You cannot convince yourself that you've got a great forehand when all of the evidence points otherwise, because you feel it. You feel those nerves. And as I say, all of that vulnerability. So she has a vulnerability. That's like loads of players do. You know, look at the success that Sabalenka's had over the past, I mean, what, 6 months, 9 months since she sorted out her serve. It can be done. you don't need to be scared of it, but everybody's terrified of doing it.
Someone who's loving life at the moment is Mira Andreeva, the 16-year-old Russian. She got those three huge wins against, was it Fernandez, Haddad Meyer and Magdalenet. Then she's on Tennis Channel doing interviews talking about how beautiful Andy Murray is. I mean, she's having the time of her life. She's she's on tour. She's seeing sort of heroes walk past her. It's lovely to see that as well, isn't it? That exuberance of youth, the coming out, they get it, and also the talent that she has as well. But I love those stories, and I love seeing these new characters, these new people come onto the scene, and everything's new and everything's exciting. Yes, it may change, but you know, the big smile, and just for her just to be there getting those results. And then she lost to Sabalenka, but she said, I've got nothing to lose. I'm just here enjoying myself.
I think she's having a whale of a time. She had a great interview, as you say, on the Tennis Channel. She seemed delighted to be there. And look, I've seen a bunch of her play in the juniors. She played against, I was actually talking to my brother about her recently, well, this week, because of what she's been doing. She played against my brother's players in juniors a number of times. And obviously she was very, very good. And you look at somebody like that and you sort of go, look, she's guaranteed to be top 50. It's just guaranteed. It doesn't matter how much people try to mess it up. She's going to do it in spite of it. But then it's always interesting trying to consider the ceiling, because you never know how people are going to develop, how they're going to soak up information, how quickly they're going to move. And boy, has she improved quickly. And really just got on and done it. You know, seen the level and just gone, okay, well, I can do that, and she's gone to do it. So I think with that attitude, she's on for a pretty hefty ceiling there. So really excited to see, but she's great.
As you say, there's a long way to go. And I was speaking to some footballers that you lose between the ages of, well, the development squad and a possible first team place at a club, you know, that sort of 16 to 18, whether it's a growth thing, a mental thing, they just don't want to play football anymore. It's, you lose so many players, and you can't, yes, you can look at a talent and say they're amazing, but you don't quite know where that ceiling is yet. But I just like to see the smile. I like to see the way she plays. I like that she's having fun, that she's out there. You know, it's the exuberance of youth. And someone else I just want to give a quick mention to is Holger Rune. I'm really warming to him, because I think he's the character that the men's game needs. So much talent, so many wonderful rivalries, but he is just, he's that one that can poke the back at your Achilles heel. He'll sort of scratch your Achilles heel and say, have I annoyed you yet? And he'll do that to the public, he'll do that to his family, and he'll do that to his opponents.
Oh yeah, big fan of him. And I think, look, he is still young, and sometimes he can cross the line a little bit and you're like, okay, it's a little bit whiny, a little bit bratty. But in general, I think he's fantastic. And I agree, you need to have different characters. That's what it's all about. And we talked about this last time, the potential of that three at the top, with Sinner, Alcaraz and Rune, so reflective of Federer, Nadal and Djokovic in terms of the personalities. And Djokovic has taken Rune under his wing, and I think Rune's going to try and embrace it, because it's a natural part of his character. I think he likes the combative sort of mindset when he's on the court. I think that's how he gets the best out of himself. You know, somebody like Andy Murray, he likes to be combative on the court as well, but he tends to be combative with himself and with his box, nobody else. Whereas Rune is just directing it at the other end of the court, to the crowd, to the umpire, which is fine. I don't think there's really any difference. It's just people's reaction might be a bit different. But ultimately, he likes to be combative with his mentality to get the best out of himself, just like an Andy Murray, just like loads of players. And that's how he channels it. So I think great. I mean, how entertaining. You're sitting down for a Holger Rune match. You're going to go, right, here's the show. Let's go.
Boy, is he a confident young man. I mean, he's just got all the ingredients. And then Medvedev still being Medvedev. He had a little go with the crowd recently. So I think it's exciting. The characters we've got on the women's side, I think the mix we've got in there and the rivalries that are going to come through there. I know we were, maybe weren't, not everyone was worried, but there was a period of what is going to happen when we lose these big guys and girls. We haven't lost all of them yet. But I just think tennis is, maybe it's a transition period and it will lose some fans, but I think it's exciting. I think the storylines, I think everything, I think it's building up to be a lot of fun. I'm not going to ask for your Roland Garros predictions yet.
I did them last time. It's fine.
Did you? So who did you say? Świątek and Nadal? Did Did you?
No, it's not going to be Nadal.
It probably is.
Nadal.
Do you give it to Alcaraz?
No, Djokovic.
Djokovic.
And possibly Świątek.
To Świątek. Okay, I'm going to have to...
They weren't serious predictions, okay?
Oh, right. So you're saying you want to have another crack at it once we've got the draw?
Yeah. Well, I think that's only fair.
Well, I don't know. If you'd got... Oh, now you're only joking. Okay. So, yeah, I've suddenly become very confused because we've now got Madrid is longer, isn't it? And Rome's going to be longer. And I feel
yeah,
there's
you
a
get
lot
a real
more...
like, what day is it? Like,
it's, yeah.
We're so and, used to the Monday to Sunday schedule.
I know. And then the bigger clashes are kind of happening a little bit later. That's something else to get used to because, you know, normally those big meetings, they're just happening a little bit further in. And then, as I say, with Naomi here working, I was like, what round are you on? Where are we? So it's just... I know this is probably a discussion for another pod. The good and bad, do we like these longer tournaments? I love it because there's more tennis. I can see the pros and cons from people looking at it, and some people won't benefit from it. Some people do, but it's just a lot of tennis. So yes, I've had to work out. And also it's bank holiday in the UK, so Madrid's longer. It's bank holiday, so I currently don't know what day to put my bins out. And that is I live my week when I'm at home by what day the bins go out, because I know what day it is. Because Madrid was longer and we had a bank holiday and we've got another one because we've got the coronation of the king.
Back to back.
And I live in a place where lots of royal stuff happens. So I'm a little bit at sea with what's going on. So, okay, next week's pod, I'll give you some coronation stuff. How about that?
I live in a place where lots of royal stuff happens.
Is that worth tuning in for next week to hear some coronation stuff?
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay. Are you excited for the coronation?
Well, I don't want it. Does it say bad to say no? It doesn't really have. I'm not a big royalist. They are here.
Yeah, and I think it's one to talk about because the buzz is weirdly sort of quiet.
I think excited is a strong word. I think where I live, there's lots of stuff that's going to be happening. The boys' school are doing some bits, and that's going to be really nice. And there's going to be some street parties, and a chance to see your friends and have a picnic. So I'm excited about that. But I wouldn't say I'm like, whoa, it's coronation week. But I think it's going
to
be
have to park about 5 miles away from your house.
Oh, you know what? On I think Thursday, I'm parking. I'm not moving the car. If anyone needs that, they're not taking the car because we're going to be blocked in. But so I think it's like, I think if the weather's nice, I think it'll be a lovely weekend to get everyone together. I think from that point of view,
it's an excuse to celebrate.
Exactly. And I'll have some coronation stuff for you for the pod next week.
Perfect.
Can't wait. All right then. Have a nice week. Bye.
Happy coronation.
Thank you.